It will be an opportunity for many of the world's leaders to have informal one-on-ones. Everybody is waiting for the meeting between US President Donald Trump and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. There may be meetings between the Chinese President Xi Jinping and Trump, and there will be many opportunities to discuss hot issues such as North Korea, Syria, and Ukraine. Sophie Barnett, a researcher of the G7 G20 research group of the University of Toronto, is in Hamburg. She told me that the G20 was lifted to state leader level after the global financial crisis in 2008.
Since 2008, the leaders have been meeting annually, as well as different ministerial meetings throughout the year. And although it originally started with the goals of financial stabilization and making globalization work for all, it has increasingly come to include political and security issues, just like its G8 counterpart.
Now, hopefully behind closed doors, the leaders will have a chance to discuss economic issues as well. Shannon Burrow is a general secretary of the International Trade Union Confederation and observes the G20 process closely. She hopes for a final statement, which includes rather high ideals.
In order to restore confidence in the global economy, we need a pay rise. We need to ensure rights and freedom and the minimum living wage plus collective bargaining that will do something about historic levels of inequality and give people hope. Corporations must be held to account. They can no longer simply take the wage theft that comes from low wages, the oppression and violation of rights in terms of insecure and unsafe work, and pretend that this is a model of globalization people will support. So if we want to secure a global economy, then the future for workers must be secured as well.
Now, if we look at the world map, most continents are well represented in the G20, but Africa is a big blank apart from South Africa, which is a full G20 member. What can Africa hope to get out of this meeting? Well, the G20 has invited the current head of the African Union, the president of Guinea, Alpha Condé, and then there is Senegal as a representative for the new Partnership for Africa's Development, NEPAD, sitting in as well. Sophie Barnett says that it's exactly these partnerships that may get a boost out of the G20.
One thing that Africa can still get, despite the lack of African countries within the G20 group, is the focus on the partnerships being with Africa and development being with Africa rather than for Africa, and realizing that for progress to be made, it has to be in partnership rather than the provision of aid from one to the other. And so while they are not part of the G20, the talk about them, especially Germany's been pretty clear in its priorities about using with rather than for and treating them as equals, I think is really important. And I do think that they will benefit from that language.
Now, the official venue of the G20 is locked off completely from the rest of the city of Hamburg. There is a massive police presence and civil societies organizing actions, demonstrations and performances to protest against what they say is the impersonal, almost dictatorial side of the G20 that for them represents faceless globalization. Sven Kemener is with the art collective 1000 Gestalte, or 1000 Shapes, and he describes what they did in the run-up to the G20.
Hundreds of people that were cloaked in clay marched through the city of Hamburg slowly and without actually feeling anything or seeing anything, and transformed and actually broke out of their clay shells. For us, this represents a society which is moving forward into a direction that no one feels included in the political process. For us, this breaking out means that we can't wait for any elite to make changes for us. We have to do the changes ourselves.
The G20 will last for 2 days and end on Saturday with a joint declaration.